Welcome to Discover Indie Film. I'm your host, Jeff Howard, and today's interview is with TJ Power, who is right here.
Hey.
Excellent to have you. All right, so there's a big history with TJ, actually, and Discover Indie Film, and that is, so his latest film, The Bus to Birabira, he wrote and directed it, and it was at Film Invasion Los Angeles in 2020, and it is in the TV series Discover Indie Film on Amazon Prime Video, Season 4, Episode 2. But it doesn't stop there, because the film he made before that, that he wrote and directed, Your Call Is Important to Us, that won awards at the Sherman Oaks Film Festival in 2018, and that is in Season 3, Episode 1 of the Discover Indie Film TV series. I know it's too many syllables. And I might add that we did a podcast. This is, TJ is a returning champion. He's back at the Discover Indie Film podcast. And if you're curious to hear his full history, because I don't doubt we'll go into it this time since we've got it, go to podcast number 97 from May 1st, 2019. I did my research. I looked that up.
Yeah, wow. I'm impressed.
But you are basically here to follow up on Bus to Birabira because, as I recall, the Q&A during COVID for Film Invasion in June of 2020, I believe I told you the film's perfect. I said something like it's a perfect film.
Great. I'll cop that.
I think it's just such a great epic film, beautiful cinematography, wonderful acting, wonderful writing. Everything about it I enjoy, so it was an absolute pleasure to have it be in the Discover Indie Film TV series.
Thank you. It's an honor to have it in as part of the series.
And the first time you came in, I got your personal history. So I don't know if we have to do the personal history as much as you can just talk about where Bus to Birabira came from in you.
Yeah. I feel like I should go back and listen to that podcast.
I should too.
I don't know my history. So I talk about where the film came from. It was actually inspired by the lead character in the Bus to Birabira is a woman called Arielle. And a friend of mine named Arielle told me a story, which is what the film is based on. So I actually emailed her and said, may I use this story as the basis for my film? And if so, can I please use your name as the character? And she said, yep, go for it, which is fantastic. So it was basically a story about Arielle and her friend were on this bus trip in California, funnily enough. And they were traveling through California. It's a big state. It was a long trip. And they met a young man. They described him as a boy, a young man. So he's probably between 18 and 21 or something, who had been in and out of prison a couple of times. And he was on his way home from prison. And they told me this story, and I was just, I was hook, line, and sinker in. And I remember going home and writing this down, thinking this would be a great idea for a story. And now this was in probably 2009 or 10, they told me this story, and I wrote this down. And I didn't even write my first short film until 2000 and, when was it, 16, I suppose. But I just knew that it was a good story, and somehow it's, you know, it won't be wasted. So I do that a bit. If I'm writing songs, I'll record a little tune, and then I'll come back to it years later and go, oh, actually that's pretty good. I'm ready to write that now. And the same kind of thing happened with this film. After Your Call Is Important to Us, I was looking for ideas, and, you know, I came across this one again. I was like, oh, that's really cool. And it's different. And I can see the film. I could see it was one of those ones where you have the idea and like, oh, that's a good concept, or that's a good idea, character, or whatever. But this one was one that I could see. It sort of sparked the imagination straight away. But we may have spoken about this in the interview in regards to Film Invasion, but I didn't know how to or why I should write it or why I should make this film, because it was just a cool story. But, you know, a cool story can be a cool story. But then when I found the why, it just made it, you know, it sort of rushed the process along. And
was the why like the social economic dimensions of it? Was that in there when they told you about it was the class differences really clear in their story? Or?
Well, in their story, it was what struck me was this kid never had a chance. Like, yeah. no matter what he did that was good, he would always be labeled as the bad kid from town, the trouble kid. Oh, look out for, you know, Brian. Oh, it's Brian again. He's no good, that Brian. And he could just be riding his bike, but people would be, looking at him sideways and keeping their eye on him. And that's evident. I mean, we spoke about this last year. That's kind of what a lot of the unrest was about last year as well. Like, and that made sense to me. But because of my history as a human and as a storyteller and as a filmmaker, I didn't feel like I had the right to tell that story, and the history to tell that story personally. So what I tried to do was make it for an audience that I would relate to personally. So making this story with just sort of hints towards this subject matter, which brings people closer. And I really believe that. Like, you can't expect someone who doesn't know about a subject to care about a subject. But if you can bring something that they do know about and then pepper it with this new subject, that's an introduction. And then they have a question, and then they can follow that question. They follow that rabbit hole. And this is kind of what the purpose, this was my why. The why was like, we don't all start at zero, but then the kicker was, but we're all made of the same stuff. We're all the same, but even though we're so different. I know that's kind of hugely cliche and very kind of cerebral, but at the same time, it's a way to bring people in.
And I would argue it's not a cliche way. At all.
All right.
Okay. I think it's actually an underdeveloped thought in at least our society. Mm. I mean, I think people way too often judge people who start at zero. There are people who start at zero, and there's the people who don't. Mm. And they judge the people who are starting at zero as if there's something wrong
with them. As if it's their fault.
Yeah, as if the Trading Places, right, like a documentary about different kids and where they get, doesn't hit people as well as characters.
Yeah, and that's what I wanted to do. Like, I know that a lot of my... My family, my family friends from Australia wouldn't identify with this subject matter. But if I put it, if I put it in the towns that they're from, which is what I did, and with people who look like them, which is what I did, then it's like, oh, that's a human story. And then that can translate. You've got a reference point. You've got a case study that you can then go from.
Yeah, so really, I mean, you had a purpose far beyond entertainment here.
Yeah, and which is hilarious because I do remember arguing with my drama teacher at school about what the art of acting was. I was like, no, it's entertainment. She's like, no, it's more than that. I'm like, no, it's not. But yeah, it was. And I wasn't, I'm not trying to save the world. It's just like... it's just like kind of raising a question to people that I care about other people that I care about.
And it's not heavy handed. There's no, I believe the term that people have to be aware of is virtue signaling. And this film is not about virtue signaling. It's not, it's not heavy handed. It's not at all over the top.
Which is also another thing I often have this discussion with my wife about. I'm just so sick of being preached to. It seems like right now in particular that there's... Well, actually, I disagree. Maybe not right now, but in the last sort of 5 or so years, we have been preached to. We have been chided through entertainment. We have been, we've been in trouble by our teachers, meaning storytellers. And I'm sick of that because I believe in humanity more than that. I believe that there is so much good and that we can tell stories as well. And so I don't want to make it heavy-handed. And this was entertainment and a story and a journey. And but it had, this thing that I guess you're trying to express. So you express it through the characters. And it's so not heavy-handed that sometimes I'm surprised when people get it. I'm like, oh, great, they got it.
That's true because the line, not everyone starts at zero, I mean, maybe mention 1.5 times.
Yeah, 1.5 times.
You really have to not be paying attention. I think even if someone didn't notice that line, there would be an acknowledgement. And I have to be honest with you about something. And we don't have to worry about spoilers, right? So to speak, is when I showed it to Elizabeth, who, you know, I showed it to her this morning because she actually hadn't gotten to see it because she just hadn't until today. And I had forgotten about the cell phone at the end that he had just put his number in it. And we both jumped to that conclusion that you tested the audience with of, was he stealing her phone? Mm. No, he was giving her his number. But because of his history, we had that snobby reaction at first.
Yeah. Did you really?
I really did. Even though I'd seen it before, I'd seen it. Well, I guess the last time I saw it was June of last year.
Yeah.
So I had a year. So I was like, it took me half a moment to realize, oh, no. He just picked it up while she was asleep and put his phone number in it. Because a friendship is forming. But when he walks away and turns back, there's almost that moment that he was, I don't know. I think you nailed it, is what I'm saying.
Well, thank you. But I do have to admit, that the part of that is quite unclear, I think. And I actually watched it again this morning too, because I was like, I haven't seen this film for a long, long time. I want to remember it. And I guess the thing that he's done there, it's on the screen of the phone, it says outgoing call. So he's made a call from the phone.
Oh, he called himself from there, so he has her number too.
Well, you know, this is totally giving up what I wanted to do, but it was quite difficult to capture this in, like, you know, a few shots. But basically they're talking about calling the grandmother, or make a call, and he doesn't do it. But in the story that I wanted to tell, and I didn't quite have the ability to do this on the day, but he's called someone and it's a number in Birrabirra. And so what I tried to capture was that he's made the effort. So he has listened to her, he's made it, and he's taken the phone while she's asleep to do this because of whatever reason, pride, blah, 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 but then forgotten about it, given it back. But he's maybe it's his grandmother's phone.
Okay. So it has a different meaning.
Exactly.
But the great thing about film and art is that
exactly
different interpretations.
And there have been people who have gone, that was his grandmother's phone number. And I'm like, oh, great. And other people have gone, he gave her his number. And I was like, yeah, great. or like, you know, whatever else. It's a very kind of subtle moment. But in the true story that I was told by my friend Ariel is that he did that. He reached into her bag and she was... you know, quite shocked, and grabbed her phone and put his number in the phone. And that was kind of what I was doing in trying to capture, but I also thought maybe if I can layer that, it's not maybe it is his number, maybe it's his grandmother's number, but whatever, it doesn't matter really. What matters is that he's made an effort to change his timeline. And now, now because of that, she also has a new timeline. And when I watched it today, because it's been a long time, and you know the beauty of hindsight and the clarity of hindsight. When Josh McConville, who plays Tom brilliantly, he turns around and says, "Good luck with your story," and then walks out. And I was like, "Oh my gosh, he performed that so well." That had a new meaning to me today, just watching it, going, "Wow, he's talking about." Not just her story, obviously, that she's reporting on, but her new story, her story of him, I was like, oh, so profound.
Yeah. Well, it is, because, and it's a simple kind of profound, which is why it works.
Yeah.
It's not a, yeah, I keep saying it's not heavy handed.
He handled it delicately and beautifully.
No, and all their interactions were great. I mean, I love the scene where she is pushing him to call grandma, and he gets to the point that, you know, he almost wants to, like, knock the phone out of her hands.
Yeah.
I mean, she pushes a bit too hard because of her privilege, and she can't possibly imagine that she's wrong.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, because she is right. She is totally right, but so is he. So, and that's the complexity of their relationship. Yeah. And it's, very hard to capture in a short film. I think I think I tried to accomplish a feature in a short film, but,
possibly like I told, I think I emailed you after you sent this because we'd met before at the previous mm-hmm. festival, like you had released your inner David Lean. This is almost an epic short film.
Because
it just covers so much humanity as well as landscape.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of A River Runs Through It and Legends of the Fall and the epic landscapes of that film. And that's just made me want to go to Montana, even though it's filmed sort of North Montana, Canada, I believe. But that kind of stuff has always captured my attention, and I guess I kind of wanted to do my best attempt at doing that as well in a beautiful place that I knew of. And
Well, here I have questions for you, actually, from the lady I live with.
Oh, yes.
She wanted to know because you found two superb actors.
Yeah.
She wanted to know how far in advance were you able to cast them? Were they people you knew before in Australia? Did you just fly out? Because I actually don't know the timeline of your production. I know you were living in Los Angeles in pre-production, at least.
Mm-hmm.
And did you like fly out there and do a quick casting session and find two amazing people, or did you have them in mind long before?
Well, I had this was a very different experience to Your Call. Your Call is important to us. I wrote it over here, and then I was filming a show in Australia, and I used that kind of time to rehearse with the actors, you know, make the set, do all that kind of stuff, and then I had edited it before I left to come back to LA. This one, I was over here and everything was different and the timelines were really tight, and my wife had just started a new job. So she, you know, our whole travel arrangements were quite confusing. So what had happened was Your Call was playing at the Melbourne International Film Festival and I flew back for that. And I knew that I wanted to shoot in this particular place. So, but I just did a quick location scout while I was there. And I had also, been applying for funding. So, to do that, I had to get as prepared as possible. And I found this cast and I had, Josh, I had, attached, and I attached another actress to the other role. She had to pull out, unfortunately. Unfortunately,
and those were people you cast because you knew them.
Because I knew them, yes,
and you knew their acting.
I've never worked with Josh before, but I'd seen him. I think the first time I saw him was in a play. He was in the same year as me. I graduated from Whopper the same year he graduated from NIDA, and so I saw him in a graduation play, and I was like, "Who is that?" And he was fantastic. And I'd seen him in some other plays since then, and every time he, you know, was by far the standout. I think he's an amazing, just naturally gifted, but also intelligent actor. And so when we, cast Liz, I say we unfortunately lost our first, actress, but we then fortunately gained Liz because she was in my class actually at Whopper. And so, she's very good friends, very good friend of mine, and she's perfect. And she's talented and hardworking, and yeah, she knows, you know, she knows the skill, the craft, and so it was it kind of just works out how it works out. So I had cast them just through, you know, hey, I just approached them, here's the script, how do you feel about
right.
this
no let's talk about call.
No, and I did that for my last film too. It's just I'm lucky to know a lot of people. And we did, because it was so important, we did sort of like really think about the casting. But it came down to them in the end too. Like there was still a lot of people in consideration. It wasn't like it was like, oh, hey, I'm just doing this thing. Can you come and do it? There was a lot of people in consideration. But I asked the two best people for the job and they did it.
And they are superb. And in fact, as much as Your Call is an uproarious comedy, and this one is certainly more dramatic, they get the comedy in it too. I mean, the comedy yeah. comes through. I think I laughed because it's been a little while. I think I laughed so much more this morning because right. it's been a while since I'd watched it. So I got to actually enjoy their awkwardness. There's a lot of very funny, subtle moments.
Well, the only time we've ever had a live audience, because thank you, COVID, was at Christmas time. I flew back to Australia briefly. I was there for 3 weeks and we had a friends and family screening at Gundagai, which is the town we filmed in. And so it was a local crowd, so I've got to give that credit too. But there was so many more reactions than I anticipated. I just felt, because I'd never seen it with an audience, I didn't know how it resonated. And there's the moment where she's, you know, she's awkwardly trying to make conversation. She's like, "Oh, you on holiday?" Or he says, "Oh, I just got out of prison." "Oh, nice." I mean, sorry. Like, she's that thing, and that really kind of sang through. Funnily enough, it was actually wrote more comedy, but it for a bunch of reasons, the performances that came out when the two actors got together kind of led to this other place, and also probably honoring the subject matter, I kind of took a lot of the comedy out because it was
right, kind of like in the editing room, you focused more on the story.
On the truth of it. Like, yeah. When you have to cut the fat, what's the fat? And I guess that some of the comedy is, like my style of comedy is a bit ridiculous sometimes. So, well, that's, the funny stuff's the real stuff. Like that's, I just got out of prison. Oh, nice. Oh, sorry. Like, rather than.
And it's really her fish out of waterness.
Yes.
Because actually it's super hilarious from the start because her interaction with the shuttle driver, he is classic. Yeah. I don't know if I would believe you if you told me he was just the guy who drove that bus like normal.
He's my uncle.
He's your uncle.
He's my uncle, and he used to drive a bus. So I was like, "Hey, Pete, can you do this?" He's like, "Yeah, right." So he had like three lines of one
it was
word.
The same word, yeah.
Yep. And we rehearsed it. He's never been in front of a camera before, even in, in his entire life.
He was perfect. He's perfect.
He was absolutely
perfect. You can
tell
him he gets applause from Los Angeles for his acting.
I'll send him this podcast.
Why not?
Yeah. But yeah, so we rehearsed it, and he took it very professionally, and he was great, and he could take direction quite well. He was really nervous, but he didn't have to be. And he was also a trooper because he did a lot of driving. We were there for 2 days, two and a half days actually with him. I feel so bad about this, but we covered him in like canola oil to make him look sweaty. Didn't complain at all. He was just perfect. Yeah.
Understood. That works. And that does launch the comedy of her, how out of place she is in that environment.
Yeah.
Which works.
I mean, yeah, that was hilarious. We had full disclosure, we had a whole like Lazi at the start of the film. Like, we had the whole first half of the first day was just shooting all these like little bits of REO, kind of like swatting flies and swallowing flies and trying to get reception and all these little comic pieces. But to cut the film down to a reasonable bite size and to cut the fat that wasn't part of the story, unfortunately, that had to go.
Yeah. But the holding up of the phone is a great way to just communicate where she is.
You get it.
Yeah.
You
totally get it. Question about that scene. Actually, I have a question about that scene, which is, it's an art department question. Was that graffiti there, the happiness for all, was that there, or did you guys scratch it on?
It was there.
It's so perfect.
I know. And that's kind of the whole thing, happiness for all. And it's spelt incorrectly too, which is even better. Like, so I sent, due to the distance troubles, I sent a big message to a lot of my family out there and said, "Hey, we're just looking for bus stops. Does anyone know a cool kind of place?" And one of my cousins, Sarah, I'm very grateful to her because she went out on a bit of a reconnaissance mission and took a photo of a few bus stops. And I saw that one. I was like, that's where the film starts. It was amazing. It was this perfect blue, like faded blue. The grass was growing up all around it. And I had the graffiti on it. And that was our promo for all of our Kickstarter fundraising stuff. And unfortunately, someone in the town found out that we were going to shoot there, and a couple of days before went and graffitied their name all over it. Because, it's going to make it in the film. Like, and so the only thing we had to do was try and match the color that we had before. It was just on the sides and cut that out, because that's just, it's like someone honking their horn as they drive past going, "I'm going to be on TV." Obviously, we're not going to use that take, but yeah. But that was it. It was there.
Yeah, it's so perfect. It's so that's why I would have thought that if it wasn't there, you would have put it there.
It was so perfect. It was unbelievable.
And, I have to share another thing with you that from watching it, one of the better films. Well, we had this amazing documentary called Hacking for the Commons, which was actually about agriculture. And and right to repair farm equipment, all kinds of mm-hmm. things, and you know, the seeds that, and yeah. so then seeing this film again, I was like, oh my God, she's writing that article about,
yeah.
about, you know, I just thought that was actually something that I didn't really get as much the first time, I think, of that she's really diving into a really important rural story.
I mean, she's given a puff piece, but she's aware of it. She says, I know it sounds stupid, but it's a micro view of a bigger problem. So she's smart. She's struggling to make her life better as well, but it's a thing. Like, and I guess, you know, I was writing, this was in script form of some way for about a year. So, you know, you get deeper and deeper and deeper and you try and like distill your ideas or condense them at least. And, yeah, so that was in there too. And I mean, it's a real problem.
It's huge. Yeah. It's bigger than anyone knows, really.
In Australia.
There's only a handful of farmers, independent farmers around, I guess, around the globe are dealing with this, with seeds that are...
cross-pollination, they get sued for it because, you know, a seed blows in the wind and, it's terrible.
Yeah, yeah, I'm forgetting the name. They're copyrighted, they're trademarked, whatever.
Monsanto seeds, yeah.
Yeah, the seeds themselves, like, and they won't reproduce on their own. You have to buy a new seed every time, all kinds of... they're making it impossible for independent food production.
Yeah, it's disgusting. It's just greed. It's just greed at its worst because, you know...
And it's hitting the people
who
are already starting pretty close to zero, which...
Yes.
Which... So, there you go. Your film is really quite a big world.
Yeah, it is. I was kind of, you know, watching it today, I was... I mean, this sounds terribly big-headed of me, but I was like, oh, it's better than I remembered. I was so lost in the making of it.
Actually, that makes you sound humble because that... Because a year ago when it was in the festival and I was telling you that, like, this film was perfect. Like, this film is truly... There's not a bad moment in this film. And you're like, well, thank you. I mean, that's your opinion, not mine.
Well, it's just like you're so in it. You're part of it. You're so attached to it and you can't separate from it. And then when you kind of watch it with new eyes, like, oh, wow, okay, yeah, that's a big concept. And like I said, with Josh's delivery of that, you know, good luck with your story, I was like, oh, he did that brilliantly. And it does mean so much. And the topics that it hints on that relate to the character's journeys, I was like, oh, that's okay. That's good. I was proud of it this morning watching it. Yeah.
I'm silently applauding TJ because it takes, look, I talk to a lot of filmmakers these days, and it takes a lot for someone to get the perspective. Maybe it does take a year. Maybe I should always, should be 1 year later so that people, because you pour your heart and soul into it.
Where are they now?
There might have been a film inside your mind that was, you know, but instead you can just be proud and happy with how it came out.
It was a very different film to the film that I wrote. Very different film. I mean, that's the cliche thing of the film you write, the film you shoot, and the film you edit. It was just a very different film, but somehow we pulled something together that worked.
Yeah, it works wonderfully. Mm. And I also figured I'd throw in, I can't remember your lead actor's name.
Josh McConville.
Josh. Just looking at his face, I swear to God, that guy should actually be on our TVs all the time.
Oh, I don't know why he's not.
He's, you just look at, I think I said to, you know, this morning, I was like, look at that guy. Just look at him. And he looks, I don't know the word. He has that screen presence.
It's just because he doesn't push anything. Like, for instance, I mean, I'm going to nerd out on acting because I'm an actor first, I suppose. But you know, there's a scene where he's sleeping, right? He's just a little cut away to him sleeping. He's not trying to do anything. He's just sleeping. But because of what we endow him with, and he's aware of that as an actor, what we endow the character with, it works. Like, okay. Like, you're observing him. And that only works because of the work that he's done before that. So, you know, he's just sitting in his seat and he looks over to her, doesn't do anything, but you're like, what is he thinking? There's just this power in his simplicity. But I'm like, he was fantastic. I mean, there was the big scene in the cafe. It's like a 7 minute scene or something. It's the whole short film. And so we're filming in Gundagai around people who don't really see film crews that often. And they do the scene. They do it the whole way through each take. And afterwards, they give them a clap. And he's like, okay, cool. And they were like, oh, aren't they just brilliant? And they were clapping him as well for his performance. And he was, I think he felt a bit uncomfortable because he's not used to that on a set. But he was good enough to applaud. Like, everyone in the room was applauding. And Liz too, like, just, oh, they were so good. I mean, we've seen Liz on our screens. That's what I'm talking about, Josh. We've seen Liz on our screens, and we'll see a lot more of her as well. But Josh just hasn't done the thing over here. He's been too, I guess, Australian theatre just wants him so much that he's always unavailable.
Yeah. That's great.
Yeah.
And I think I want to add that crowd in that cafe, in that town, applauding mm-hmm. him, mm. and he is representing them in the film. Like, yeah. he's one of them. And yeah. so the fact that, you know, I assume he doesn't, when you meet him as himself, he probably doesn't come across like he just got out of prison.
No, he's a legend. He's, you know, he talks about football and, you know, he's an intelligent guy and he's just fun to be around. But he just has this yeah. simplicity and this power and great imagination mm-hmm. and he's very agile. He's a very agile actor.
Yeah. But I mean to say that the people in a rural town saw him act
yeah.
as a person from a rural town and it resonated
for them. And they connected with it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was pretty funny actually. There was one take where, there's a scene in that cafe that the people in the background are, you know, my friends and part of the crew, but there's three women in the background. And, there's my stepmother and my two aunties and they were really getting into it. And, you know, my aunties was there stirring the tea and going, ting, 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 ting. And Josh was like, can we hear this? But I was so into it. I didn't even notice as well, but, yeah. But anyway. Yeah.
That's inexperienced background artists making noise.
I mean, you know, well, that could ruin their careers, but we'll see.
We won't worry about it too much. No. But if you direct another one, then you can still use your aunties. Why not?
Yeah, I'd hope they'd say yes again.
For sure. Well, I like hearing that this was an idea that sat in a back drawer for a mm-hmm. while and you just never forgot about it.
Mm-hmm.
Are there things you're planning next? You've been too busy. I happen to know that you're been a new father twice in the last couple of years. So
yeah.
I don't know if that's affecting how much you get to write.
Yeah, it's definitely affecting how much I get to write.
But wait, you have something you're working on.
Yes. Yeah, I do. So, I believe it. There's a feature film that I'm redrafting and redrafting and redrafting as they do. But this is something that is very exciting. It's a comedy. I would hope to shoot probably in Australia, but it's kind of it's a ridiculous comedy set somewhere between here and the afterlife. And then there is
no. I mean that sounds yeah. like your sweet spot.
Yeah, I mean yeah, exactly. And then there's. I don't know why I find death so funny. And then there's a TV show that I'm working on with a friend that is just a very, very epic world. And I haven't written a script for that yet, but I have. There's a show Bible and, you know, a outline of a pilot and the series outline. And it's just such a vivid and rich and full and corruptible world that it's really exciting and that's kind of taking up most of the creative filmmakers creative space right now. Yeah.
An extra question as far mm-hmm. as a citizen of two nations now,
mm-hmm.
Yeah. US and Australia, and it seems like you do favor shooting there. Are there advantages to shooting there, or is it that your roots are there and you have better network? Or
the advantages to shooting in Australia is just the people I know. So I, the DP that I've worked with twice now is, I've worked with on two feature films as an actor. So that's how I got to watch his work. He is great. I like the way his mind works. I like his work ethic. He parties hard, but he works hard. And I kind of relate to that. I like to, when I get to work, I don't like to leave work until the work's done. And So I just have people there. I know the actors there. It seems like an easier market to get to because of that. I would love to do some more filmmaking work here. Just if the right sort of connections arise and the right opportunities arise. But I feel like just because of, my roots, I just think it's easier to manufacture stuff back there.
And I have to say, the cinematographer you're talking about, I mean, your call is important to us. It's all basically inside a room or two, maybe three rooms, but mostly one.
Two rooms,
and it looks brilliant. Well, there's also the office, right? And then there's a room the guy wakes up in.
But, but that was filmed in the same room as the...
And just amazing work, pretty much trapped inside a small space. And then Busta Bira, he does an amazing... He gives you David Lean landscapes. And then the shots inside, actually. Yeah, I love the cinematography in that film. I think there's one where she's in the background in focus and he's in the foreground out of focus. And just...
And also the way he shot some of the landscapes there that obviously we couldn't put a lot in, but I was, again, today watching with fresh eyes. There's a moment where Ariel sits next to Josh in the bus, and then the next scene, the next shot is a travel shot over a bridge looking at the river. And I'm like, that kind of tells a story of kind of, it's like all your problems don't matter out here. There's nothing that matters out here. You're just people existing in the same space right now. And somehow, however he captures every part of that, it's not just, that's going to look pretty. It's like, how will this tell the story? And we work on that together. And it was, and the Busta Bira Bira was much more a collaboration with Dan Freen than on the days than it was with Your Call Is Important to Us. Your Call Is Important to Us, we did a lot of preparation work, and so I had more time with the actors. But in this one, we didn't have that luxury. So it was, and I also had two actors that I could trust. So it was very much a collaboration with him on telling the story visually. Two totally separate experiences and approaches, but they both were, and it just shows his range.
But you, as director, and he as cinematographer, you sat and discussed, like, thematically, not just that you want a beautiful vista, but you were saying, we're trying to tell this part of the story now with this landscape.
Yeah, like, and even within the positioning of the actors in the bus, like, he had ideas about that to tell the story. It's great.
That's why it gets such high praise.
He's fantastic, and I feel so lucky to be able to have worked with him, and I hope that he'll pick up the phone again because I enjoy working with him as a friend too.
Oh, it sucks to start over if you happen to have your feature come in and he's like, ooh, booked for 9 months.
Yeah.
Oh, that would be a punch in the,
which wouldn't surprise me really with him, because he's so good and busy. But, I mean, there's that shorthand and the history. Yeah. You don't want to start again. Yeah.
Understood. Well, it's great to hear all this stuff is coming up.
Mm.
And do you want to mention in there a Netflix film you're in that's about to hit?
Oh, yeah.
Why not?
So, yeah, Resort to Love hits this Thursday on Netflix. So it's a romantic comedy.
Good timing. I'll probably be two backlogs, so this will probably come out a couple of days after that.
Well, it's online now then. It's on streaming on Netflix, July 29.
If you want to see this great writer, director, filmmaker in front of the camera.
Yeah, acting like a goose in front of the camera, tune in.
The dance in...
Yeah, I think there is some dancing in there somewhere. There's all sorts of things. It should be a fun film. It's got some great actors in there. Yeah.
Cool. And you know what I didn't do? I was going to look up those four questions where you answer your favorite films and this and that.
I was
going to look up your answers last time
and just read them off
to you. Yeah. Which I could do real quick right now if you want me to. Because I figure we don't need to re-record it.
No. But yeah, I I'd be interested to hear them anyway, yeah.
I'm going to pause. And that should be a seamless transition because I just stopped it, brought up the webpage, and now... I don't know. This could be the worst podcast moment I do, but you're not going to see his face. I'm going to see his face. So do you want to guess what any of your top three were?
Top three films.
Favorite films of all time? Ooh. You name three.
Was The Matrix in there?
Matrix is in there.
Yeah, such a good... Oh, imagine Back to the Future in there or something? Like
no,
that?
No.
No, Robert Zemeckis?
That's a good... That's a... I would almost say that's an underrated... I don't think people realize how brilliant that film is.
Oh, it's so good. It's just a great world.
Every aspect of that world is perfect and managed intelligently.
It's such an adventure, too. It's ridiculous fun.
It is. And it holds up.
It does hold up. Yeah, even though it's really old, but it's... yeah. What else could it be? I think at the time... So, what could it have been? Oh, Life is Beautiful.
Life is Beautiful.
Yeah, that would have been number one. Yeah.
That was number one.
Yeah, and that's just a brilliant combination of comedy and tragedy. And I think I remember now saying something about Warrior. Was that in the underestimated films or something? Or
yeah, you did mention Warrior. No, you... Yeah, Warrior was one of your underrateds.
Okay, what was my third favorite?
Your third one was The Dark Knight.
Oh, yes, yes. Well, that's funny. That's like an acting study, that one, yeah.
That is.
Heath Ledger.
Although, yeah. If you redid it today, maybe you'd slide something else in.
I don't know. Maybe it would. I don't know. It's tough.
Yeah. And you actually did two underrated, Warrior and...
Was it The Castle?
La La Land.
La La Land. Oh, yes. See, there's so many good films.
So many good ones.
I don't get to watch
and
much
actually,
TV.
Actually, The Castle you put in as a lesser-known people should seek out.
Yes.
Along with Seven Psychopaths.
Oh,
which
yes.
Is such a great film.
Yes. I don't think I could. Now that they're in my head, I don't think I could top those answers. They are.
And the last question is, can you name what you called overrated at the time? And
overrated.
Remember, overrated doesn't mean it's a bad film. It means it's a film that gets a good film, maybe, that got too much recognition.
Was it The Hurt Locker?
No, but that's a good one.
I love Catherine. It was Catherine Bigelow, right?
Yeah.
Like Point Break, brilliant film. I mean, and she's great. But yeah, I just thought that was just the whole film was in one scene. And
yeah, no, it wasn't a feat. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
And then the fact that it got... Best Picture or that, Best Director was,
yeah. Was,
but you know
that's probably why
everyone always wins what they don't deserve it for, right? It's like you know, even yeah. The Coen brothers won for No Country, and I think they had many films that were better. But yeah. Mad Max Fury Road.
Oh yes, I mean, look, I don't want to say that one out loud. I've actually just auditioned for the next one, but yeah, I so many people love that film, and so many people I respect. And whose opinions I respect, love that film. So I feel like I'm missing something and I should rewatch it. But I remember I've only seen it the one time. The sound design in that theater just made me cringe. It was kind of just like too much. But the story, I was like, okay, great. Like I didn't care about anyone. It was a spectacle. And I probably spoke about this last time, but the rules of a world are there to be... You know, there to so that we know the stakes, we know where the limit is, and if we break that limit, that's huge. That's like, that's the climax. That's the break to the next act or whatever. And it's just like, okay, so we're in this post-apocalyptic world. Gas fuel is at a is really valuable, but there's a guy with a flame-throwing guitar wasting like that kind of stuff. Just makes me go, oh, well, what's the point of that? And I get. That's stylistic and visually, it's like, whoa, it's epic. But it's like, well, I don't care.
They were just making it for fun. It was just basically supposed to be fun then, right? Just
it looks like a whole bunch of fun, except I know that it was actually really tough to make.
Yeah, but, well, you know what I mean. Like, yeah. They just said, you know, it is. I'm with you, though. I actually didn't see it because...
We have very similar tastes.
I think so. But yeah, the fact that they weren't loyal to this... fuel being a value thing. It's like, you know, it's just when a movie's like, oh, the audience won't give a shit because we're just hitting them with spectacle.
Yeah. I mean, we go for explosions and, you know, and special effects or, you know, but we also, we have to care. Like comedy isn't funny unless we care somewhat. And love and tragedy isn't, you know, tragic or romantic unless we care somehow. So I didn't care about anyone. At all in that film.
I understood.
And
you actually named a second one.
What was it?
And it falls along the theme of Dark Knight. It was Suicide Squad.
That's a joke, that film. It's just, again, like, I have to say, I don't like bad-mouthing anyone, but Marvel seems to do things better at this point anyway.
Oh, there's no end to the frustration of the difference between the Marvel universe and what they're doing with DC.
Yeah.
They keep, I mean, I have a problem with the Wonder Woman films as much as I want to love them, you know, and I was dragging a young female who I want to see.
Mm-hmm.
I want her to see female heroes on the big screen and know that women can do it too. And then like, they're just, and then the third act is like the, you're bored while she's fighting the big guy. It's like,
yep. You don't care. My wife has spoken about that film, on a few occasions, talking about specifically the physicality of the women too. They have this false strength in their physicality. So they are, you know, holding their chests out, their arms back. And what that does, it makes them weak because they're trying to portray strength rather than being relaxed and strong in their bodies. And so I think they kind of overshot the mark and missed it there. But yeah, Suicide Squad, talking about those rules, there was no rules and they broke them. And what was with that scene with the Joker around the knives? So put that in context of life. Was he just there sitting around putting knives out? Doesn't he have like something more fun to do as the Joker? It's so weird. There was no purpose to any of it.
And it's easy to be more critical of these films because they come from this. They have a history of graphic novel literature, right? There's so much to the world, and when you do that little with it, it's kind of right. It's just not like, honestly, I'm down on most Batman films for that reason.
It's very, very easy to pick at a film. Like, you know, they're terribly hard to make. So credit to the filmmakers. I just think that there was maybe too many cooks in the kitchen for that particular film. Like it's a credit that any film gets made and distributed, really. But I just think that you've got to, like, the play's the thing. You've got to get the script right.
I think you nailed it. It's the cooks and it's the fact that it's a big corporation, whereas somehow
Joe Blow's
Marvel managed to just let one guy who's a genuine comic book nerd write that, Kevin Feige, and he just guided this whole cinematic universe from the perspective of a fan, and they trusted him. Mm. And all the DC stuff is by committee, like you can see. Even
it's like everyone's trying to, you know, justify their paycheck by giving notes, and it's like, well, you've sterilized it a little bit.
That is what everyone does, the paycheck justification.
Yeah, and we don't, you know, sometimes you can justify a paycheck by taking a step back and going, that's actually okay. Anyway, but I don't like to I don't want to badmouth films. It's just that was I did laugh at that film for all the wrong reasons.
Well, we brought up Overrated last week. We could have done it, you know, in the middle so that we didn't end on that.
Yeah.
There's a lot of films you love. I'll say again that Life is Beautiful is one of my favorites of all time and will forever be. And Lord knows, I'm wondering if maybe I should just rate films like the longer I cry, the better it is.
Yeah.
In which case, I think the only film better than Life is Beautiful would be Whale Rider.
Whale Rider? Is it the New Zealand film?
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow, that's been a minute.
That one, I think I actually cried through the credits to the car.
Yeah. Where's my car?
Because it's beautiful. I weep at beauty, not sadness.
Yeah, well, that's what I guess for Life is Beautiful. It was, you know, when he's doing that funky march off to his... you know, his son's watching. You're like, it's funny, and you care because of what they've been through, and it's genuine, and it's just the best balance.
And when that U.S. soldier pops out of the tank, and the boy thinks
he's won.
My dad promised me a tank,
and
I got it. And so you're just seeing it from the boy's perspective, and it's the most happy, beautiful moment.
Yeah.
And so, yeah.
You care about that? I don't care about...
Screaming down the face. Yeah.
Oh, my
God. It's beautiful. I got to watch that again, actually.
Same.
I haven't seen it for far too long.
I don't even know where it's streaming right now. Is it streaming right now? It has to be.
Yeah. I've got to get me a copy.
Yeah. It's so good. Thank you for bringing it there.
Thank you for putting it on your list. And, I have to do the wrap-up.
Uh-huh.
I was almost going to forget the house cleaning. I don't know if there's any... I don't know if you want to mention your Instagram or anything, if people want to check you out, or if you just prefer...
Well, whatever. Yeah, I guess it's TJ Power Oz. So TJPOWEROZ.
All right.
That's it.
And I'm going to mention all the Discovery Indie Film and Film Festival links now, which is if you want to see two films that TJ Powers written and directed, go to Amazon Prime Video, search for Discovery Indie Film, and they're always at the beginning, like Season 3, Episode 1 and Season 4, Episode 2. Watch those films. And if you want to learn more about the podcast or the TV series, go to discoveryindiefilm.com. Or on social media, go to @DIFWins. And besides being a returning champion to the podcast, TJ, both of those films are in different film festivals I program. The first, Your Call is Important to Us, was at the Sherman Oaks Film Festival, which is every November here in LA. So ShermanOaksFF.com and @ShermanOaksFF on social media. And in June, we hold Film Invasion Los Angeles. You can learn about that at filminvasionla.com or @filminvasionla on social media. And I have finished my FM DJ imitation of an announcer. And thanks for coming in.
I will also have to say before you sign out that if you are a filmmaker and you are looking for a film festival, do seriously go to Sherman Oaks Film Festival and to Film Invasion LA. You will not have a more personalized experience. And Jeff is obviously a lover of film and independent film. So they've been very, very valuable to me and my crew as a filmmaker. So thank you for having us. But yeah, I would definitely recommend those festivals, not just because Jeff is holding a knife to my throat telling me to do that right now, but because they generally are great festivals. So yeah.
We will never do it, but I always joke that I always want the motto to be the film festivals that give a shit.
That's true. Yeah, you do. You should use that.
It should. You know, I don't know. Maybe it'll work.